Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, March 23rd, 2018. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Digby from the Uber blog Hullabaloo and the online outlet Salon.com. Also on the program, McMaster out, Bolton in. Yes, Bolton. Turns out Guccifer 2.0 turns out to be a Russian intelligence officer. Well, looky there. The omnibus spending bill passes. Trump now threatens a veto. No one's clear why. Trade war takes the sheen off of Trump's stock market and very well may target Trump's base. And shocker, Trump offered reparations to a model for having sex with her.
I'm sorry. Even I have a little self-awareness about what that must have felt like.
And speaking of someone being, someone unwilling to be a paid prostitute, Trump's top lawyer in the Russian affair quits. All this and more on today's program. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, going to be a little bit on the brief side today. Not anywhere near what a normal non-Majority Report length show would be, but brief for us. I have been out. I want to apologize. I had a little touch of the pneumonia. And so if my pallor is a little bit gray today.
Owie.
Yes. Owie. I was literally like, you could hear my lungs gurgling. Fortunately, you know, on Monday, I complained of being a little bit under the weather, and I had already started taking antibiotics because I suspected I might have pneumonia because I had had it once before, and it's not something you forget. You get like chills that literally you're afraid of knocking out your own teeth. And but I'm back and I'm probably at like, I would say 70%, which would put me at still like 140% of the Pod Save America guys. So I figured I would come on and do the show. Now, last night it was probably premature in terms of my health, but I had been tired of being locked in. I went, I was on, Ari Melber's show. And originally I was going on to talk about the Randy Credico interview he had done the night before. Randy Credico, a comedian slash political activist, and I would say now much more political activist than comedian, hosts a show on WBAI. And he was on this show. I think we had him on. Maybe it was 5 years ago. I met him once or twice over the years, or I guess 20-some-odd years ago in when I was a comedian, maybe more, actually. 20 years ago when I was a comedian, and wasn't aware of his political activism. And I don't know how deeply he was involved at that time. I think pretty. And there was a great documentary about him, and I cannot remember the name of it, but off the top of my head. But it was shot by Laura Keitlinger. I don't know if she ever released it. I think she did. But that's what I had him on, I wanted to talk about his activism. He was very instrumental in tackling the Rockefeller drug laws in this state. He is a bit of a merry prankster type.
He seemed pretty interesting guy.
Yes. And apparently he got caught up in the, he's been, I guess, interviewing Roger Stone and has some weird relationship with Roger Stone. I'm not quite clear about it. And got caught up was named by Roger Stone as the conduit from Julian Assange that supposedly gave him confirmation about different things. And I couldn't make head nor tails of it. But so I was going on Ari Melber's show ostensibly to talk about that. But the Bolton thing came up. And I figured I was going to get bumped, and I'm waiting to maybe go on. And they had a Republican on, it was breaking news during his show, so they had to grab whoever they got. And I heard one guy go on there and say, John Bolton's not that extreme. He has some fairly conservative views on, and I literally in the, not the green room, but the room outside of the glass studio, popping out of my chair, like they must have heard me swearing because like literally after that, like Ari brings me in. And this is what I had to say about Bolton. We're going to talk more about this with Digby, but I also want to show you just because I don't think I've ever looked this gray in my life.
Look pissed, and rightfully so.
I was pissed, but that's also like all the blood had drained out of me, and I'm not sure if it was because of Bolton, the fear of Bolton or the pneumonia.
A man who was too radical for a Republican-controlled Senate in 2005 to be ambassador to the UN.
So a lower position than this.
A lower position, far less involved in foreign policy. He is a hardcore neoconservative. He was one of the biggest Iraq war cheerleaders. He was part of a project for New American Century, which was exclusively neocon.
All right. Now, I got some pushback about the neocon thing. We will talk about that with Digby when she comes onto the program, because there is a distinction without really a difference. The nomenclature I found always to be sort of tiresome and silly. But we will talk more about that as the show progresses. OK, and I guess we should let's run this thing with. Let's save this for Digby, because I think we may end up talking about it. Well, all of it, I was going to say, the Karen McDougal stuff. I don't know. Should we do the Karen McDougal?
I would, if you don't mind, like the opportunity to.
Let's do the Karen McDougal right now.
Thank you.
Here is the story of she's an ex-Playboy model. And apparently, according to her, she had intimate relations with Donald Trump.
And you hear that? Don't you think that like the whole interview should be like you want to just like drape a blanket around her? Be like, do you need any tea? You want to like not be exposed to bright lights?
Yeah, you just imagine there being a lot of like, really? She came on CNN to talk to Anderson Cooper last night, and she told him, after we had been intimate, he tried to pay me, and I actually didn't know how to take that, she said at their first alleged sexual encounter. When Cooper asked her if Trump had to hand her money, McDougal said he did. I don't even know how to describe the look on my face. It must have been so sad.
Honey, no. Take the money.
Honestly, like, I think that is called reparations, I believe. But here's what she had to say about the constant comparison that Trump would make between her and his daughter.
Did he ever compare you to any of his kids?
You know, he's very proud of Ivanka, as he should be. I mean, she's a brilliant woman. She's beautiful. She's, you know, that's his daughter, and he should be proud of her. He said I was beautiful like her, and, you know, you're a smart girl, and there wasn't a lot of comparing, but there was some, yeah. I heard a lot about her. Yeah.
Did that strike you as odd in any way, or...?
You know, I know a lot of people think it's odd. You know, there's been some comments I've heard in the news he said about her, and I think those comments are wrong, but do I think it's strange that a father would love his daughter so much that he brags about her? No, I brag about my dog that much.
Mm. I like that.
Yeah. What's that supposed to mean?
Yeah, I know. I don't know if I want to give her the credit there, but I do like how that all wound up with her comparing Ivanka to a dog. That was well done.
So, you know, the I've talked to a couple of people who have various theories as to, is there a relationship between the reasons why Donald Trump has paid off so many of these women and what could potentially be in the Steele dossier? We will talk maybe a little bit about that with Digby on the program. But yeah, odd.
I thought you meant you've talked to various people about our theories of how many bases he's got to with his daughter.
Oh,
it is. I mean,
I'm sorry. It's objectively bizarre.
It's not strange to be proud of your daughter. It is strange with how sexualized his pride is.
I think so that gross. Would be the point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think anybody was just like, he says his daughter is smart and he respects her. What a weirdo. I think it's the more like, Wendy, what we share is sex.
What?
If I wasn't her father, I'd date her. It's more on that continuum that it gets a little weird.
I got to think if I ever found myself saying to a woman like, you remind me of my daughter, would be the way I would say, that's why this could never happen.
You remind me of my daughter. Let's smash.
I hope that she is also being paid to pretend like she was sad that he tried to pay her. And I also hope that she got extra for the incest play involved. Because that is extra.
That is extra, apparently.
Why would do incest play when I can have actual incest play? That's stupid. People don't, that's, you don't know how to do business.
All right, I'm going to take a break to go to the bathroom and vomit. And when we come back, we'll be talking to Digby.
Soul around I wanna dig into my guitar, bend the blues riff that I am. jams with earplugs, but these days I inhabitate a high-pitched ring over things. So these days I plug them up.
When I'm struggling with my songs, I do the same thing too, and I crunch them up in headphones, cause why wouldn't you? You could say I hear you on several levels at high decibels over everything.
We are back, Sam Seder, on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome back to the program, as always, the proprietor of the Uber blog Hullabaloo, as well as columnist at Salon.com, Digby, or Heather Parton. Hello, Heather.
Hey, Sam. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Recovering, I should say. All right, let's get into this Bolton thing. You know, it feels like the failure to account for what a disaster the Iraq war was/is continues to haunt us in so many ways. John Bolton is back. And just for folks who don't know who John Bolton is, tell us.
Well, John Bolton has always been a very, very hard right hawk. And he was, during the 90s, he was a member of a sort of a cabal that formed around the Iraq War and some ideas that sort of came out of the right during that period. What we called neocons at the time, and although it did have a sort of that cabal was more than just neocons, that was sort of the ideas that came out of it during the 90s were about this idea of what they would call benevolent hegemony, you know, that it would be the Pax Americana, that Americans would rule the world in benevolent fashion, bring democracy and freedom, and, you know, we'd all sing Kumbaya.
This is, of course, Project for a New American Century.
That's right.
Sometimes people refer to it as PNAC. Yeah.
The manifesto that sort of undergirded the argument that they raised to lead us into the Iraq War after 9/11, which they had been waiting for an opportunity. And in the manifesto, they actually said, you know, we need a new Pearl Harbor. Yep. They got one. We all know the what happened then. Now, John Bolton, even among that crowd, was considered to be out there. I mean, he was even a fringe member of that particular group, and largely because his view, and, you know, we can talk a little bit more about this, but his, you know, he, just to give the history, he came in and they put him in the State Department, sort of as Dick Cheney's mole in the State Department, and he sort of was there to keep an eye on Colin Powell. That was his role. And when Richard Armitage and Powell left, Richard Armitage was Powell's assistant, and they both were sort of leaving under a certain amount of duress after the first term. Bolton was supposed to be raised up to Assistant Secretary of State, and that didn't happen. Everyone objected, and it didn't. So they nominated him to be the UN ambassador, and they couldn't get the votes. The Republicans, you know, a bunch of them wouldn't even vote for him. That's how far out he was. And think, this is 2005. The Republicans were out of their minds, right? I mean, you know, John Bolton was too much for them. But Bush put him into the UN anyway in a recess appointment, and he made a complete fool of himself. They hated him there. Everyone hated him there. Condi Rice was having to call up the Secretary of State in the second term had to call up and constantly sort of, you know, tamp down whatever kind of problems he was causing in the UN. He is, in short, a nut. He is a far right nut. Let me just put it this way. I don't know if people who are listening probably remember Atlas Shrugged, Pamela Geller. There's probably a lot of people who know who she is. She is a far right Islamophobe, dangerous and violent. Person.
She ran the Ground Zero mosque campaign. She was the one who funded draw a cartoon about Muhammad, event. She is a lunatic. She's considered such a lunatic, in fact, that our Brendan, our producer in absentia these days, was telling us about the story about how her kids have tried to hide their identity, have had to try and die to get out from under, being her daughter. That's how, I mean, it's sad, and they sort of renounced their teenage years where they were also Islamophobic, and then they went off to college and realized, oh my God, something to that effect. But she is a lunatic, so I just wanted to set that up as you talk about Bolton's relationship with her.
Well, they're very close. Let's just put it that way. Lunatic.
He blurbed her book.
He has appeared. In fact, if you go to YouTube, you can see the interviews between Pam Geller and John Bolton. In fact, I don't mean to spread rumors or anything, but there are rumors that they were actually, close, if you know what I mean.
Reparations are to be paid, in other words. Yes.
And, so, I mean, this is the fringe side that John Bolton exists on. Now, it's true he was in government back in the 2000s in the Bush administration. He did have some, quasi credibility as some sort of a government bureaucrat. But the truth is that he is a fringe dweller. Just, not that far in, maybe a couple of degrees out of, Alex Jones. I mean, that's how bad he is. And as the idea that he is going to be the national security advisor is, there's a reason why people are, even people who aren't normally, the sort of panic artist types are going, oh, my God. Now, getting back to what we were talking about, what I mentioned earlier, his association with the neocons. The truth is that the neocons had varying degrees of neoconservatism, this idea of, let's all sing kumbaya and bring democracy at the point of a gun, and we're going to run things. Bolton is a much more straightforward neocon. Doesn't really matter. I mean, these definitions are irrelevant to the fact that it's all about, American dominance, war, and whatever kind of gloss you want to put on it. We're spreading democracy, or we're just going to take the resources. It doesn't really matter because it all adds up to the same thing.
Exactly.
But in Bolton, he is much more straightforward, about what he believes. And he believes there should be no international law, that the United States is a law unto itself. He has said this, that there's only one law, and the law is what's good for the United States. And the rest of the world has to abide by that law. He believed that the United Nations shouldn't exist, even though he became the ambassador to the United Nations, which was always kind of a, you've got to be kidding. This guy is very, very much, I mean, as far as I can tell, what he really is just a straight up old fashioned imperialist. Just, we're going to take over, we're going to dominate. And in that respect, he is very much like Donald Trump. They are national security soulmates. And, going back to the American Carnage speech and Donald Trump's campaign, when everybody was saying, oh, he wants to withdraw from the world and everything, and America first. I felt that people were being confused about him. They didn't understand what he really was. And that is, when he says America first, he means we're number one. That's what Donald Trump means by that phrase. He's not talking about,
care for the domestic needs before others.
William Howard Taft and, let's withdraw behind our borders. Yes, he wants to build walls. But it's not. But that's just to keep out the foreigners. The idea, there's a reason he wants to expand the military to the point, on a level that we haven't seen since the height of the Cold War and maybe beyond. And that is where he and Bolton are on the same page. And what's scary is that we have two crises on the horizon, very, very serious. One, of course, is North Korea. The other is Iran if Trump decides to tear up the Iran deal, which does the hiring of Bolton is an absolutely clear signal they're going to do that. So,
All right. So I want to just pause there for a second, and we should talk about the implications of what would happen with the Iran deal. But I just want to also reiterate this point about John Bolton. In the past, about 3 weeks ago, he wrote a piece basically describing how we could win a war with North Korea. Maybe it was a year ago, he said the way to stop Iran, maybe it was 2 years ago. He literally wrote an op-ed piece in the Times. The other one was in the Wall Street Journal, if I remember. In the Times, the piece was entitled something like "The way to stop Iran from getting a bomb is to bomb Iran." I mean, so this is a guy who is again diplomacy, and we should also say this is at a time where, like, I should add his position is basically in charge of absorbing all of the government's ideas, essentially, all of the national security apparatus ideas, and giving them as options to the president. So he has the ability of saying, like, here are the options. You can bomb them, or you can invade them and bomb them. I mean, that's basically what is the concern here. And the other concern is there's no mitigating factors. There's a gutted State Department. There are no people around, you know, Donald Trump to say, hey, you know, actually, that may not be the best idea. There might be some other ideas. There's no other funnel of ideas short of, and I'm not saying this facetiously, Sean Hannity.
Well, I was just going to add that is where Trump is getting his advice. I mean, for instance, and I don't want to digress into the details here at the moment, but, you know, just this morning he's now threatening to veto the spending bill, which the White House had agreed to. The Republicans have passed. Yay, they've got their spending bill. He's now going to veto it. And the reason is because he was watching Laura Ingraham, and she was saying there wasn't enough money for the wall, and so he's mad. And, you know, so that is the other, you know, he's going to have John Bolton, and he's going to have Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham and Tucker Carlson and whatever the Fox and Friends bozos are. Those are the people that he listens to now. There's nobody else. I mean, and I mean that literally. There just isn't anybody. I mean, I guess Mattis over at the Pentagon, who knows what he's going to do. He's lost his allies now. I guess Kelly is sort of one of his allies.
Supposedly, right? But I mean, Kelly seems to be completely, aside from being a horrible person at his core, to the extent that he was exercising any discipline on Trump, that seems to be over. I mean, you had said, you had said to me, I think 2 or 3 weeks ago, that you had felt that the 2 or 3 weeks prior that Trump was really behaving in a way that suggested that he was starting to feel his oats. Like, he started to realize, like, he controls this place and he doesn't need to kowtow or to listen to anybody. And since that time, he has gotten rid of his top lawyer in the Russian thing. He's gotten rid of Tillerson. He has now gotten rid of McMaster and replaced them with complete cronies. I mean, total yes men. And it's clearly that's going on.
Oh, I don't. I no longer think there's any doubt. I got a feeling about that maybe a month ago that I'm going, okay, something shifted, and it had to do with the idea that he was suddenly. He'd either just decided that you know, things weren't going well, and he just was deciding that, you know, well, I'm the one who has to take charge here because, you know, none of these people know what they're talking about, obviously. Or he's starting to get panicked about the Mueller investigation and decided that, you know, he needed to, you know, do some dramatic things in order to try and change the trajectory in some way and maybe set up the idea that he was going to fire Mueller. in any case, it doesn't matter because he is doing this. I mean, it's pretty clear. He's just basically taking a wrecking ball to his entire administration. You know, Tillerson was the other one. I mean, he's just letting them all go and basically, you know, encouraging anybody who wants to go to walk out, to walk out. And he's replacing them with, you know, people he sees on TV. That's essentially the sort of, you know, the whatever headhunting he's doing is doing it when he's watching TV and eating his cheeseburgers in bed. And by the way, there was a report yesterday that he was actually thinking of eliminating the job of chief of staff altogether and running it like he ran, running the White House like he ran the Trump Organization, which, you know, I mean, I think everybody needs to remember that was a tiny little, you know, family boutique company that he inherited from his father. It's not the United States of America's
right.
government. But he thinks that he can do that, and he doesn't want anybody telling him what to do. So, you know, he's letting go. He's unrestrained. He's doing what he wants. And what he wants to do is please the Fox News people. That seems obvious to me. That is who he is governing.
There was something
for.
That really stuck. I mean, this is going to seem so sort of narrow and myopic. But on, I guess it was just 2 days ago, Trump had a tweet that was when he was talking about calling Putin. And, you know, people wanted him. He wrote something like, people wanted me to excoriate him. And I'll tell you why this stuck out with me. There is one person that I have heard use the word excoriate over and over and over again for the past 3 or 4 years. And it is Sean Hannity. And yeah. I don't think that Donald Trump has ever used that word before.
Never.
Very few people use it. But if you listen to Sean Hannity, even half as much as I do, and God forgive us all, that word, and that's what just, it spooked me. Like, I'm not convinced that Sean Hannity isn't writing some of his tweets for him. Like, text.
He might be.
I mean, like, this is the level that we're at. Like, we're at full Mad King territory again.
Yeah,
you know, we were there for the first couple like weeks of the administration, and then, you know, somebody came in and said, look, you know, this is what you got to do to get along, and he took it. But now it's like the Mad King has taken over again. And if you were going to, you know, if you were going to do like the movie version of the Mad King, him sitting in his bed eating cheeseburgers, just picking off cabinet members from who he sees on TV, would be how you do it, right? And like next,
absolutely,
it's going to be like Shark Tank is going to be the, you know, I mean, this is the way that he's operating. It's terrifying. It's terrifying because because he has this other, like, there's this other motive of like, well, in addition to this, is the guy who, when he sat down for that security briefing, was like, why can't we use the nukes? Like, we got them. Yeah. Why aren't we using them? This guy also probably understands that, like, my way of dealing with Mueller will be to also simultaneously do these other things at the same time. And these other things could be literally like an attack on North Korea.
Well, I mean, I don't know. At this point, I don't know what would stop it. I mean, I guess there's the idea that he can, you know, that the Mad King, you know, it's the madman theory that, you know, Richard Nixon set forth, which is that he's so crazy that everybody in the world goes, okay, you know, whatever you want, man, you know, okay, well, just don't get mad. And that Kim Jong-un, for whatever reason, decides that he's going to capitulate. And, of course, you know, Trump requires total capitulation. It wouldn't be enough to just, you know, sort of back off a little bit. And John Bolton as well. But that's the problem, is that, you know, especially with North Korea, that guy is in survival mode. That is what this whole thing is about. He is, when you have John Bolton talking about regime change, which is what he says about North Korea. It's not, it's invasion, preemptive bombing, regime change. That is a red flag to Kim Jong-un that you know, he's dead if he goes along with these people, right? I mean, that is what basically John Bolton is saying. And, you know, they had been very, I mean, McMaster was a very hawkish, you know, advisor on North Korea. But even he wasn't going that far, right? I mean, they would couch the language in, you know, you've got to stop your nuclear program and you no more aggression, et cetera, et cetera. But the idea of actually talking about regime change, which is what Bolton's all about, by the way. I mean, that's his entire thing. Take over these countries, invade and take over these countries and install people that are friendly to the United States. That's what he wants to do. Saying that to North Korea means that it is a provocation of a fundamental sort that is extremely dangerous in this moment. And yet here we have Trump, you know, saying he's going to go over there and talk to Kim and they're going to get along. Well, you know, hiring Bolton, he might as well, if there was any chance of that happening, which is unlikely, but if there had been, hiring Bolton was an absolute, you know, he just threw a,
well,
you know,
Bolton is on record as saying that he thinks that we should negotiate with North Korea so that we can prove that it won't work, so that we're justified in bombing them. I mean, he is the value of any diplomacy to Bolton is expressly to pave the way for a military
for the
attack.
War he wants. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, and the thing is that, you know, this is what Trump wants too. I mean, any idea that Trump, look at the guy, listen to him, he's violent, he's aggressive, he's a bully, he wants to show the world, you know, they're laughing at us, we've got to stop them laughing at us. He says trade wars are good, we can win easily, we've got to build up the military to the biggest military the world has ever known. You know, if you listen to the guy's rhetoric, this is what he wants. He you know, he's a simplistic, you know, puerile man-child who thinks that war is like a game. He never actually participated in one, neither did Bolton. And you know, this is what they want. I've always believed that about Trump, that he wanted a war. This would be the ultimate expression of his great leadership and dominance. What else? What else is there?
And I'll say this, that, you know, and it just occurs to me as we're talking about this, that when Trump basically said, I will meet with Kim Jong-un, I'll meet with him, there was pushback from Tillerson, right? And it's quite possible that, and even back then, you know, the name Bolton has been bandied around for quite a while.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's quite possible, and probably more than likely, that Bolton was advising him a month or 2 months ago when this offer came up, or, you know, and we should say this offer has almost been a standing offer. There's always been an attempt by North Korea to have bilateral direct negotiations, because that elevates the North Korean regime if he can meet with Trump. So this is not a new offer, and it's quite possible that Bolton was telling Trump for months, meet with him so that you can get past that, so that then the military option becomes, you know, it's the last resort. People want it to be the last resort. Get to the last resort quick. And that's very well what could be happening. Like, this could very well be the, you know, because it's been reported for a while that McMaster has been out, is going out. The whole timing of this could be something that is, you know, not a necessarily a sophisticated plan, but a, you know, here, let's put three dates on a map. Okay. And that's what we're watching. And it's terrifying. And this is without even talking about what's going on simultaneously with Iran, because, sure you saw this reporting by Ryan Grimm the other day, that it is quite clear that Jared Kushner, functioning outside of, you know, sort of any type of like system of diplomacy that, you know, we are used to in this country over the last, I don't know, 150 years, that he's basically made this deal with the Saudis and with the UAE, and is telling the, you know, was the source for the purge by the crown prince of all the people that he should be looking out for, and that Bolton's antipathy to the Iran deal is a precursor to a potential war with Iran as well. I mean, this is because there's no, we can tear up the deal, but we can't, but I guess here's the point. We can't tear up the Iran deal. Because we don't have the leverage. It's a multilateral deal.
Right.
We can say we're going to, boycott and freeze Iranian assets and whatnot. But if I'm Iran now, all my assets are moved to Europe. I'm out of reach of what United States can do in terms of my assets. And in terms of the United States boycotting us, most of that's going to be made up by Europe and Russia and China. And we can't really do anything. We don't have the leverage to go back on that deal in the way that, the Trump administration is pretending we do. But all we can do is, start justifying an attack.
Well, exactly. I mean, well, look what just happened this week. I mean, the Crown Prince, the new, the young guy, the Kushner's buddy, was in D.C., and they agreed to this massive sale of military hardware to Saudi Arabia. And it was then reported that the Saudi Arabian Crown Prince, what do they call him, MBZ, MBJ, whatever.
MBS.
MBS, sorry. Yeah, that he had, he was telling people that he had Kushner in his pocket. Literally, he's saying, yeah, I got Kushner, this guy, And I mean, it had been reported that Kushner, as you mentioned, was, going over there and they were having these, long, kind of all-nighters sitting around chewing the fat, the two princes, they were called, talking about strategy. And, I think the assumption is that some kind of deal was made there. Nobody knows really what it was. There was nobody else present other than Kushner. And, of course, their own finances are all tied up in this stuff as well. We have got a situation where we've got something going on there that's pretty obvious that is leading the United States into some kind of alliance. I mean, the Saudis have always been our allies, ostensibly. But this this idea that we're pushing into this warlike posture in the Middle East against Iran, I mean, that just seems to be one piece of it. Now, I don't think that Jared Kushner is some kind of big strategist. But I think maybe.
But he definitely has a big need for someone to salvage 666 Fifth Avenue.
That's
I think
exactly
it is.
Right. He has that much strategy. And, the Saudis are, they do have, strategy for the Middle East. I mean, they're actually, they can have thought all that through in a way that I doubt Jared Kushner ever has. So, we're finding ourselves as a nation. I mean, it's just, try to imagine what it looks like from outside this country, what foreign governments must be thinking. I mean, they have to be now starting to gather together quietly and saying, how are we going to defend ourselves against this craziness? The United States of America has become a rogue nation, and they don't have any idea which direction it's going to go. And we at the moment, and this is the truly terrifying part, and the part that I just find so incredible that so many people are just kind of going, oh, come on, we don't have fascism. He's not Hitler. Everybody relax, calm down. Well, maybe we're not Hitler, but we're something else that we've never been before. We are something different now. Something unique is happening here. And it seems at this point that we're unable to stop it. I mean, look at the Republicans in Congress. I mean, this is where it really gets crazy. They're doing nothing. They walk around and go, well, it'd be really bad. I mean, if he fires Mueller, well, he better not. You've got his followers. According to Bob Corker last week, he says he's out on the, he's hearing from people out on the trail. All those Republican voters, the core, their base, care about, are you with Trump or are you against him? They don't care what he does. They do not care. It is all about following him. It really is a cult of personality. So something very you know, we're not going to repeat history exactly, obviously, but something is happening here, and it is really, really dangerous. And, you know, look, watch Fox News, everybody. If you haven't been watching it, tune in for an hour in the evening and just see what this is, what your president is listening to. This is who he's listening to, and it is batshit crazy. And that, there's no other way to describe it. It is unbelievable to hear what Sean Hannity, Tucker Carlson, Laura Ingraham, and the rest of these, you know, this crew on Fox and Friends are saying, and that is what is guiding the United States of America at the moment. And it is terrifying. Now we've got John Bolton in the White House, you know, there to kind of whisper in the president's ear exactly how to accomplish what he wants, what Fox News wants him to accomplish.
I mean, this is, I mean, I think you're right about this. And it's sort of, you know, the thing is, we're, I mean, at what point does in a, you know, as we're careening to a disaster that, you know, and look, the Iraq war, I keep coming back to this because I think the thing that the Bush administration managed to do fairly well was to, and was aided and abetted by Democrats at the time, not all Democrats, and I would say aided and abetted by the Obama administration in their failure to hold the Bush administration to account for these things, but was pretty good at keeping a distance between the reality of what they were doing and the sort of the implications for people's daily lives. And I think you understand that because, you know, I know that you, I mean, cause I know you're blogging from that time, but going out into the public for people who are not following politics was extremely frustrating because there just seemed to be this sort of like, maybe it was a function of 9/11 and people were just like, as long as I'm safe, it really doesn't matter what's happening. But, you know, we were responsible for the deaths. And this is the Defense Department numbers of nearly 200,000 civilians. This is defense. This is the most conservative estimate. And the displacement of 4 million people, 2 million outside who left Iraq and 2 million with inside Iraq. And these are conservative estimates of the havoc we wreaked. And, you know, you could see the buildup at that time. And part of it was to get the public on board, right? You know, part of it was like, how do we get Thomas Friedman on board? And, you know, how do we get these public intellectuals from across the spectrum, or at least across the spectrum of the center? And there was this sort of mass buy-in by the media, and we went to war. It's not, they don't need that this time, right? Because the normal political constraints don't apply to Donald Trump, A, and B, the only constraint would be the Republican Party, and they are now, they don't need to convince the Trump people don't need to convince the base of the Republican Party because they will literally allow him to shoot anybody on Fifth Avenue and still support him. Uh-huh. And the Republican electeds are, like you say, completely subservient to their base, as politicians tend to be. And, you know, at least if the base is, you know, as homogeneous and sort of, I guess, on the same note as the Republican base is. I mean, it's not like the Democratic base. This is a very, you know, you're right. People say like, he's not Hitler, but you know what? Hitler wasn't Hitler until retrospect.
Until he was Hitler.
Right. Exactly. I mean, you know, like, I'm not saying that Donald Trump is going to be, would have the ability to do in this country what Hitler had the ability to do in Germany. You know, you don't have to be Hitler to be a bad guy and to be a historically, you know, I don't want to say evil because it's just that's a little bit too cartoonish, but a historically evil guy. Like, I mean, it's not inconceivable that we could be 5 years out and Donald Trump is responsible for the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people, if not millions. I mean, this is not, we're in that territory now, I think. And unless someone has a good story about how that won't happen, I don't see it. I don't even know what would a Democratic Congress do? If the Democrats take back Congress, what would a Democratic Congress do? They don't necessarily have the ability to impact what happens over the next 10. Well, they don't have the ability to impact what happens over the next 10 months. But even a year out from now, if we have a Democratic Congress, I don't know exactly what they would be able to stop if this thing had already started.
Well, exactly. And they can't stop it even if he starts it after they are in. You know, what are they going to do? I mean, you know, of course you can run impeachment hearings. I mean, that would be something that they could do. I mean, they could do that in the House. I kind of half expect they will. I mean, they'll do something like that. They'll definitely have public hearings. There'll be all of this. But, you know, none of this is stuff that we don't know. It's not as if this administration doesn't leak like, an absolute flooding sieve. I mean, it's ridiculous. Of course, we know everything that's going on in there. It's not like we don't know. We do know, and it's still happening, and everybody's kind of paralyzed by it, even though it's in the public and we're watching it happen. Now, I'm not underrating the idea of the Democrats winning. That's an important moment. I mean, if we have any hope for our democracy, the Democrats really, really, really need to take back a House of Congress in November, because that's, you know, basically the only lever of power that we have, that the country has, to try and put a stop to him. Obviously, the Republican Party has completely abdicated its responsibility. What they've done in the House on that Intelligence Committee is world historic abdication of duty. And basically, they have, you know, defied their oath to the Constitution by what they've done. But in November, perhaps we can change that. Come January, there'll be some difference. But can you stop Trump if he's president? He is proving day to day, and this is one reason why he's feeling his oats, right? There are all these dire, sort of warnings of if you do this, oh, this is going to be terrible. Bad things are going to happen. You can't do it. Well, over the course of the first year, he's found out that those dire things are not happening. Nothing happens. He just continues. You know, his people still love him.
Anybody remember the suicide pact? Anybody remember the suicide pact between Tillerson and what was it, Mattis and Mnuchin? Right? Like Mattis is still there. Mnuchin's still there. The so much for the suicide pact. I mean, where if one of them goes, they're all going to go. I mean, this is and John Kelly's going to impose discipline, et cetera, et cetera. And you know, here's the other thing that I think people need to watch out for. And I know this. I think this audience appreciates this, but. You know, as I sat on that MSNBC last night, I was just wondering, once we move into this phase of the Trump presidency, where he is carrying out the deepest wishes of the Bill Kristols, of the David Frums, of the Evan McMullins, as in terms of like where they see foreign policy. People are going to understand the problem of elevating a lot of these people when it comes to the resistance, because they're not going to be so resistant. you're not going to hear about, you're not getting the proper warnings out of these people on these accounts, and it is super dangerous because and here's the thing though, and let me ask you this. As we sit here and you and I are ringing these alarm bells, what difference does it make?
I know.
I mean, this is the thing that I'm sort of conflicted about, because I think a lot of people are going to hear this and they're going to rightfully be extremely concerned. And I don't know that it has any value whatsoever.
I don't either. You know, the only thing I can say is this. I from the time, I mean, the morning after Donald Trump was elected, and I mean, I've been probably terrified from that moment on ever since. About because, you know, to me, it was obvious what this guy was from the beginning. And I never underrated his chances to win. And I never underrated what that meant, because I could hear this, you know, this essentially a dominance play on the part of him and his followers. Watching those rallies was extremely frightening to me. So I've been terrified ever since, and I didn't know what to do. I mean, to me, I you know, we talked about from the very beginning, is that we can't let him be normalized. Well, of course he is normalized now. Think about it. There are kids now who probably, he's their first awareness of what a president is. This is what they think presidents do, right? A lot of people now are, you know, you can feel it. And I don't mean that people don't look at him and go, oh, my God, what a clown, whatever. But it's normal to have a clown for president at the moment. It's been, you know, over a year. We've watched him in action. He continues on. And that sense of just that dissonance that we felt, that how could someone like this be president? Well, he is. And he is demonstrating every day that you can be this person and be president of the United States. That is normalizing. And that is why people like you and me sitting here, you know, screaming into the void, you know, we're going, well, what else can we do, right? I mean, we don't have any choice. And, of course, this is what we do. But for me, the only thing that I have that I can, as a person and hopefully as a writer and someone who, you know, speaks to other people about politics, is that I'm trying to maintain my grip on reality. Very, very difficult at the moment because, you know, we haven't even talked about some of the stuff that is happening in social media and manipulation and propaganda and all the rest of it. You know, we're sort of in this very strange moment where reality itself is being challenged. And for me, that's all I've got, right? I mean, maybe it will be meaningless, and I kind of suspect it will be, but for right now, that's the only thing I can do, is just try to maintain some grip on what I'm seeing. So, you know, when people sit here and tell me, oh, come on, you know, it's not Hitler, it's okay, I am resisting that with it. That's the resistance for me, is no, I'm not. I am resisting the idea that Donald Trump is normal and that what is happening is something that, you know, can be explained away as some kind of normal political consequence. It's just that is not reality. You know, that is not true. This is a very, very, this is unique. We've never had anything like it. I mean, nothing like this has happened before in the United States.
There's a piece out in Politico that Don McGahn wants to leave the White House.
I saw that. Yeah.
So Trump's top Russia lawyer has left. McGahn is chief White House counsel, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
And that is, I guess, Trump's more sort of like more general counsel as president. This is really, I mean, I wouldn't want him as a client, but, you know, McGahn did. He's been there for a long time. I mean, well, not a long time in Trump years, but this is also disturbing because there is this quality, and I hate when I hear this, like to compare it to like The Godfather, right? But there is this quality of like we're going on war footing, and mm-hmm. people who don't want to be involved with it, that's the door, and that. That's what's going on here. And I don't know. I mean, I guess this is just...
Will we be surprised if Trump, you know, fires Sessions, Rosenstein, Mueller, all of the above or one or more? I mean, I won't be at all. And I look through, you know, you try to see what happens then. I see nothing. I see nothing happening. I mean, what are the consequences of him firing?
Nothing. I mean, I have said this since day one. You will not see the Republicans initiate impeachment hearings short of Donald Trump running around naked or in his underwear on the White House lawn and and maybe you might require him chasing a young boy, doing it honestly. And frankly,
oh, that picture. Oh,
I think to the extent that we see the Democrats do it, if they take the House, they're just going to be walking through the motions, as a way of, like, you know, walking to the 2020 election. I mean, this is, yeah, this is bad stuff. And it's, and you know, I mean, that's why, like, I guess from my perspective, the Russian stuff is intriguing. And I, you know, I have no doubt about Russian involvement in our election. And, I have no doubt that in some way, you know, the Trump campaign probably unknowingly, you know, had involved themselves in something to this effect, and that there was money laundering and whatnot. But none of it's going to matter. Like none of it is going to matter. You know, maybe it's something that that can be used for leverage in Senate races, if it comes out soon enough. But beyond that, it's just not going to matter. Like it's going to be another data point that we have, so that when people go to vote against Donald Trump in 2020 or vote against the Republicans, they have 12 reasons instead of 8. You know what I mean? But
right.
I just think that, like, you know, the lack of pressure on Republican lawmakers directly is really problematic. Like that is, you know, because that to me seems to be, to the extent that there's any salvation, it is to get Republicans who are actually relevant to stand up to Trump. I know it won't happen, but that's the only, you know.
Well, and when you're talking really about the Senate, because I think in the House it's so gerrymandered that I think the Republicans in the House are kind of reconciled to the fact that they're going to lose the House, or, you know, they pretty much have accepted the fact that there's a 90% chance they're going to lose it. But in the Senate,
and Paul Ryan's the only person that it matters what he says about this, and they all know.
Yeah, exactly. And they know it. But in the Senate, you know, if there was a chance to take the Senate and potentially, you know, put enough pressure on some of these people in states that are, you know, in swing states, that they could stand the chance of losing their seats either now in 2018 or in 2020 for their behavior during these early Trump years. You know, that would be where the pressure point is. And I don't know if there's any concerted effort to do that. And I don't know how much, you know, I mean, it seems to me that what you hear is like that thing that Bob Corker said really kind of shook me a bit, because what I realized, I mean, he's a senator, so he's talking to senators, right? And they're saying they go out on the, they're out on the trail and they're hearing, are you with Trump or against him? That's the only thing they care. That's the only thing their voters care about. And, you know, and I kind of believe that. I mean, I know a lot of people know, well, they really care about kitchen table issues. Everybody cares about that for sure. You know, people care about their health care. They care about jobs. They care about, you know, everything. But essentially what this election is about, I mean, it's a referendum on Trump. And these Republicans are feeling no pressure from their own constituents to go against Trump. And you know, you and I've talked about this before at some length about the authoritarians and how that kind of, you know, authoritarian impulse comes from the bottom up. It's not from the top down. And I think that's what we're seeing. And to me, that is the most frightening thing. I mean, people should be concerned, regardless of your ideology, whether or not you're a conservative Christian, or whether or not you're a military hawk, whatever your ideological bent is, you know, within the Republican Party, you should be concerned that a madman is leading it, right? That he is leading the country. They should be concerned about that, and they are not. They like what they see, and I find that is the most astonishing thing about this phenomenon, is that these tens of millions of Americans are, they don't just you know, they aren't just accepting it. They you know, are supportive of it. They like it. This is their guy, and they are signed on for the duration. And these Republicans are, because, you know, they are cowards and spineless and have absolutely no sense of integrity, are unwilling to buck that. They won't do it. They won't even try to instruct their people about what might be going wrong here, you know, other than some guy like some, you know, fringe guy like Jeff Flake, who isn't a fringe ideologically, but he's a fringe in the Republican Party now. They're not saying a word.
Well, yeah. God bless America.
Yeah.
Heather, not one of the more uplifting talks we've had in a while. Yeah.
Well, this is a dark time. We're seeing a shift, I think. We're into a new phase, let's put it that way, and we're about to see a new test here, because this thing where Trump has cast off the shackles and feels that he's in control and is seizing, you know, the power that is inherent in the presidency, and is basing his decisions on Fox News, this is where we're at now. Fasten your seatbelt.
I do this too often, but, and maybe it's just a crutch, but there's everything I learned about how shit can go wrong, I learned at Air America. And the first CEO, the founder of Air America, the guy who launched it, I don't know if I can legally say was a con man, because I think there's maybe a specific definition about that. But he is a man who misrepresented how capitalized the company was caught up in a controversy involving the embezzlement of money. I'm not saying he did that. I don't know. He was certainly caught up in a controversy. And I believe he was arrested on the island of Guam at one point. But what I noticed about this guy was, he was a little bit, I felt he acted crazy. I'm not a doctor. But we would ask him, like, why hasn't this happened? And why hasn't that happened? And he would start talking about a brain tumor that he had had. And he also, I should say, bounced numerous checks to many of us. He surrounded himself with people who were either as equally full of crap or were incompetent, because they would maintain the hierarchy, but would never question what was happening above them. And they would always maintain it below them. And, you know, there's a real sense of, like, Trump is doing that now. That he's getting people in there who are just, like, super psyched to be back on, you know, to be back into it. And it is super scary. It's a super scary time. Digby, hopefully there'll be another time in the future where we're still here. But as always, a pleasure of sorts.
Yeah, a pleasure of sorts. Thanks for having me, Sam.
All right, folks. We're going to head into the fun half.
Wasn't the fun half?
What's that?
That wasn't the fun half?
Yeah, things will get a little cheerier in the fun half, because then we'll...
Where we ask more questions like, does it matter?
Yes. Why are we here? Probably the after the show today, I'm going to get called into the office of the director of marketing, and they're going to ask me what the F I'm doing to say that type of stuff on air, because you're going to drive people away from the show if you say that this talking about it is meaningless, and why should we be here, and shouldn't we all be fleeing for the hills?
It certainly took my mind off my own problems.
There you go.
Look on the bright side.
There you go, folks. it's upsetting. And I honestly, I don't know, you know, nothing, you know, but I guess the idea is that I could say, like, you know, I could come up with 100 reasons as to why it is meaningless to be aware of this stuff, but it could be the 101st that is the one that makes it important. And so who knows what opportunities we'll have to stop this trajectory. You know, I mean, because, like, you see it, you start, you know, this is the thing about when people get, you know, I can understand on some level people's cynicism or skepticism when people were ringing alarm bells, you know, the day after his election. But these type of things, I think the track gets laid one piece at a time. And you don't know what the next piece is going to be. If Donald Trump appoints, I don't know, H.R. McMaster's friend, you know, or brother, Jim McMaster, and Jim McMaster has the exact same policies, but just more of a stomach for a, you know, a little bit more deferential in a meeting, and maybe it doesn't change the trajectory of things. But a guy like Bolton... Now Donald Trump did make him promise not to start any wars, but I will say this, and I meant to say it when Heather said it, Iraq was not a preemptive war. Bombing North Korea would not be a preemptive bombing. Bombing Iran would not be preemptive, because the definition of preemptive is that the other side's attack is imminent. And there was no imminent attack that was coming from Iraq. Not even remotely close to an imminent attack. In fact, whatever the opposite of imminent is, like never gonna happen attack, that's what the threat level from Iraq on this country was. And I would say the same thing about Iran. And frankly, I would say pretty much the same thing about North Korea. There's no value to North Korea to have an offensive weapon or a weapon, a first strike. Let me put it this way, a first strike capability. What possible value would it be other than just like suicide by, you know, nuke? It is explicitly a weapon to avoid getting hit by an attack. So it's not preemptive. It is simply a war of choice. It's preventative in the sense that, like, if we wipe out everyone else in the world, we can be assured that none of those dead people will attack us in the future. So I guess he's promised not to start a war. But of course, if you can say it's preemptive, as soon as you say preemptive, you're claiming that there was an imminent attack. And that's what supposedly justifies it. So when you hear people talk about preemptive war, Iraq was preemptive, or a preemptive strike on Iran, or a preemptive strike on North Korea, that's a lie perpetrated to make the listener believe that it is stopping an imminent attack from our so-called enemies. And I don't know what you do about that. Maybe you tweet at somebody who's using those terms and remind them. Maybe it would make a difference. But, all right, just a reminder, this show exists because of the support of its members. And I mean that by the free show exists. The advertising this year, not what it was last year. This could be a function of a lot of things. We did lose a couple of advertisers. Hopefully they'll come back from that whole Cernovich thing. But for the most part, most of the advertisers have come back. It's just not as strong of an advertising year. But nevertheless, advertising was always a tiny percentage of the way that we maintain the show. We maintain the show because of our members. And as a way of saying thank you to our members, we give them extra content every day. You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Do so if you enjoy the show, you appreciate it, and you have the financial means. If you don't have the financial means and you want the extra content, send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com, and we will hook you up. I'm going to leave that vague. In a certain sense.
I wish you didn't make me say that.
It just works.
Yeah. You got to laugh, folks.
You know.
When you want to cry.
That's right.
Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. You might as well enjoy good coffee. And support a co-op. Also, don't forget. I'm going to buy myself a new respirator if we get 10 new members.
I like it.
TMBS this week.
It's sucking on oxygen. Right?
Yes.
So, Digby.
Who was on TMBS this week?
Megan Day on Neoliberalism Makes Each of Us Our Own Bosses and the Skill Gap Myth. And then Matt Bender.
Old Matt.
And actually did a really long and kind of history-oriented commentary on the Iraq invasion. And we played Blair and Bush clips from that time, but also people who called it, like Mandela had pretty intense speech at the time, which we used. And did you ever see that exchange with Jaschke Fischer, who was the German foreign minister, and Donald Rumsfeld in Munich? Where Fischer's speaking in German through a translator, obviously, and Rumsfeld's sitting there, and Rumsfeld just has this look like he wants to murder him, like almost like unprofessional in and of itself, just the look. And then Fischer just breaks into English and is like, you know, in a democracy, you need to convince people that this is a valid thing to do. And excuse me, like, I'm not convinced. Just, it gave you the sense of the attitude at the time was just like, you know, even for a country like Germany, which couldn't necessarily be bullied as easily as many other places, it was just like, why haven't you guys fallen in line yet? You're
right.
An idiot.
Yes.
You
know, and amazing. And ultimately, it was the performance of Colin Powell at the Security Council. Is this it?
No, this was the moment. Yeah.
Yeah, let's play it. This is something that probably never made it to network television.
You know,
my guess.
I looked it up, and to the extent, I don't know if it made it on network television, but there was a couple of neocon hit pieces on him, because in the 60s and 70s he was a left activist, and there was footage actually before he did beat a police officer at a protest.
Okay,
but this was their whole response: was look at him, he hates America.
Right. Yes, and this was the response. I mean, look, at the time of the war, any response from Europe that was not on board with invading Iraq and the buildup to the Iraq War in 2003, and this buildup went through 2002, there was a long windup for this. Janine Garofalo was going on television as early as the summer of 2002, arguing against attacking Iraq, I think it was. And certainly this was going through in February of 2003 is the first Majority Report. It was not on Air America at that time. It was, I just did it as a one-off on Tom Sharpling's Best Of show, or The Best Show, I should say. He gave me 2 hours to basically do an anti-war radio show, an anti-Republican radio show for 2 hours. It was, you know, his show at the time was a sort of a comedy, or I guess whatever kind of show. And he just let me do it. Janine was a guest. Benjamin came in studio to do the actual live liners that we still use to this day on some level. But none of, well, you know, what you're going to see this clip, I can almost guarantee you, and when was this from? 2002? Must have been.
I believe this was 2002, yeah.
I can guarantee you this did not make it to television, and this is going to be hard for a lot of you to understand. There was no other way to see it. You couldn't, there was no YouTube. There was, it's quite possible this was on the AP site in some type of player that if you were willing to wait in 2002 for, you know, 10 minutes for this thing to load over your maybe crappy DSL, if they had just wheeled that out, that technology.
This was actually in February 2003, so literally like a month before the invasion happened.
And so there's no way American audiences saw this. And this is Europe bucking the trend. It got so bad that Thomas Friedman was writing pieces in the New York Times mocking the French, using their resistance to I think it was either, you know, antibiotic raised cattle or non-organic meat or something, as another example. Because I remember the piece. It was something about him going to France and reading a menu and seeing an asterisk next to the beef. And it was like not raised organically or had antibiotics.
They don't want to eat hormones or kill Iraqis. What pussy.
Honestly, that... that was the tone, if not the actual words. And this is what it was at that time. And all right, so here is this is the German prime minister,
foreign minister.
With Donald Trump.
Donald Rumsfeld.
Donald Rumsfeld, sorry.
No problem.
Nur meine Generation hat dabei gelernt, you have to make the case. And to make a case in the democracy, you must convince by yourself. Excuse me, I'm not convinced. This is my problem. And I cannot go to the public and say, oh, well, let's go to war because there are reasons and so on. And I don't believe in that.
And that wasn't enough. And then, you know, Colin Powell, I think maybe just shortly after this, went to the, I don't know if it was before or after, but nevertheless, we went on to bomb the hell out of Iraq. In a shock and awe campaign, it was called. And to this day, still feeling the impact of that that war. Yes, to say the least. And I don't know. There were millions of people who got into the street in this country and around the world against it. In this instance, with Donald Rumsfeld, I mean...
You see just the look of murder in his face.
Yeah. I don't know what, you know, we're dealing with a different thing, but who knows? But
millions of people protested, and it didn't do shit. And that was, like, the defining formative political experience for a lot of people in my generation.
Yeah. It didn't do anything.
Didn't Bush say if I responded to those protests, it would be like basing policy on a focus group?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
All right. So check out TMBS. You can sign up via iTunes and also check out Jamie's Patreon at patreon.com/JamiePeck. All right. Quick break. Then a slightly abbreviated fun hack.
You are in for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun.
Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 boy, back. And the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just wanna degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back, 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 back.
almost says what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman.
And the alpha males are back, back, back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ Danner song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Danner.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, fuck. Reminder.
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are...
Psych. Fuck them. Fuck them.
Almost says what?
What?
Almost says what?
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black African. And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black.
Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100. Can't knock the hustle. Come on!
Fuck them. Fuck them. Fuck them. Fuck them. Fuck them.
Things I do for the bigger game.